Yeah, so David Emwich here, who's a creative thinker and part of the EcoEdge conference, and we're just talking to him about a few of his ideas. And in your presentation yesterday, David, you talked about sort of returning to the child within, I guess, in the way that you think, and also the fool. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. We're all born creative geniuses. One of my arguments is that the human brain is basically built for creativity. There's a strange paradox with creativity. Creativity is to take chaos and turn it into some kind of order. But in the very act of creating the order, we destroy the very thing that gave birth to the creativity, which is the chaos and the diversity. And one of the problems in our culture is that we see childhood as a transition zone to something which is far superior, which is adulthood, and we kind of graduate from our childhood, and we forget that as children we were absolute creative geniuses. The rational adult that we are today was invented by the child we once were, the child we still are. And when you look at the most innovative thinkers in the world, they are the people who are capable of what's called the art of forgetting. That is, that they're able to go back to that naivety and that childlike but why questioning. People like Einstein, for example, had an absolute abiding interest in the way that the mind of the child works, and he wanted to continually learn how the mind of a child works, because he believed that that's where all creative thinking and innovation came from. The other thing is that we've lost the role of the fool. In medieval times, the king's court had a fool, and the fool wasn't there just for entertainment. The fool was there to challenge perceived wisdom. And in our culture, we just go along mouthing perceived wisdom constantly, and we don't have the fool who stands up and says, well, everybody's saying that we won't get people onto public transport unless we make it go faster. What if we made it go slower? Can't we get more people on by making it go slower? And the fool asks the counterintuitive argument. Now, I didn't realise that these were two ways that I think that are just inherent to the way that I think. It was only after people kept asking me, how the hell do you come up with this stuff? You know, like, why is it that you come up with all these social innovations and we're not coming up with them? That I started to analyse the way that I think. And I think those two thought forms are absolutely germane to the way that I operate.
Some of the things that you've implemented was villages in Holland, where they've actually removed all the street signs and all the traffic management systems, and quite sort of a counterintuitive move that has proved really successful.
Again, this is a case of where, you know, for decades engineers have been saying the only way that you make streets safer is to make them more predictable. And yet both myself and this engineer in Holland, through experience, discovered that there is a paradoxical way that you can make streets safer, and that's to make them less predictable. And it's true that in a purely traffic environment that you do make them safer by, well, what you can make that kind of environment safer by making it more predictable. But the point is that within the city, within a social setting, social settings by their very definition are full of spontaneity, full of chaos, full of the unexpected. In fact, that they are the very characteristics that attract us to a public space. If it's uniform, totally predictable, we don't want to be there. There's no interest there. So we've had this incredible disconnect where we have the cultural development department or the community development part of our cities going, we want to enliven our neighbourhoods by definition, meaning let's have more spontaneity, more unpredictable things happening. And the traffic department saying, well, we want to make the streets safer by making it more predictable. And what you wind up with is you are promising the motorist something that cannot be delivered, and so you actually are tricking motorists into taking more risks than they should really take. And again, it's just an example of the way that we really need critical thinking that doesn't automatically start from a position of reason. It can start from a very playful, but why are we doing it that way, or perceived wisdom is the only way you make a street safer is to make it more predictable. Well, you know, the best example of this is a friend of mine in the UK who said that the quickest way to reduce the road toll is to replace every airbag with a metal spike. You know, these things are deeply paradoxical, and if you ask, if you make the fool's statement, there's an element of truth within the fool's statement.
Yeah. Well, there was a large part of your presentation too, was I guess about sort of reclaiming the streets, and it's further to that argument, I guess, about our streets. I think, particularly in suburban environments, have become very reclusive and turn their backs on the streets. And you talked a lot about sort of people taking them back over and making some claim to them as public spaces, because they're not just for cars, are they?
Yeah. Cars are a guest within the public space. They are public space first and foremost. And providing they act as a guest in that space, then I don't have a problem with them being there. In fact, they can I'm against creating purely pedestrian areas, because I think that vehicle movement through a space, providing it's of an appropriate speed, can actually help enliven the space. You may reach a certain density of human activity that says, well, we can't have any cars here at all, but If we see our streets as primarily public space in which public life takes place, and we want to welcome cars into that space, then the car drivers have to be welcomed in as participants in the public space, not as exclusive owners of the space where I can drive as fast as I like, do what I like, and hang whatever damage that does to the nature of the public space. So what this big trend in taking all the signage out, etc., is that the design of any environment sends a message to the users of that space about what might be called the normative state of that space. So white lines, traffic control devices, send a very clear message to a motorist that this is primarily a motoring space. It's a motoring space, but we want you to go really slow in it. And that may be the underlying message of it. And that then also sends a message to the residents, which says, you know, this is primarily a motoring space, stay out of it, stay away from it. And so what I'm arguing is that if residents rebuild the social life of their street, that social life in its own right will slow the traffic down, because it creates both intrigue and uncertainty, the two key psychological factors for getting motorists to slow down. And that will do far more than any design issues will do. Rebuilding the social life of the street will far outstrip the impacts of any design thing that you can do to a street.
Great, David. Well, thanks for your time. And that's particularly fascinating views, and I think been very well received here in Melbourne. I hope you enjoy your stay.
Yeah, it's been great.